Okay, we're here at the third annual Crash Retrieval Conference, and Stephen Bass, it's always good to see you. You've been busy. You were up in Montreal, huh?
Oh, yeah. We have that Exopolitics Toronto Symposium, and that Mike Bird and Victor Vigiani put on. And I gave a keynote there following Paul Hellyer's 30-minute presentation, which was, I think, a very important presentation.
Yeah, and I was talking to Mr. Vigiani, and he seems to think there's something else going to come down the pike here pretty soon.
No, they're cooking now. They're approaching the Parliament. They've got some other things underway. So I think, finally, a true Canadian disclosure process is in the works. We've been talking about that going back 5, 6, 7 years, but now it's happening.
And you've been instrumental all along in bringing this forward. We first talked to you, I think, even before you ran for Congress.
Oh yeah.
A long time back.
Well, I'm pushing the whole disclosure thing, and I will continue to do so until we get it. I help any group that I can that's involved with it. Canada offers some very interesting possibilities because they are a close ally. They sit above the U.S. If Canada were to start breaking ranks, it would be very significant, and it might even trigger a disclosure event down here in the United States.
Yeah, you and I have talked and visited about this before, and I put forward the hypothesis that perhaps some other country like Canada or India or Brazil or some places where it might happen first.
Sure.
So what's the latest with you there in Washington with the X conference?
In order to do a third conference, I had to get some funding. The first two kind of cleaned out the pantry. Probably $50,000, $60,000 is going to be needed. I'm still looking for that money. Until I have it, I can't secure the date. So right now, there is no announced date, and it's kind of hanging in limbo. But who knows? I mean, it could happen any time, and if it does, I know who to start inviting. I know how to promote it. It could be an even better conference in many respects than the first two, but right now funding is the key issue with the third X conference.
Well, I know you were able to get quite a few people at both of the conferences that you had and made a lot of groundwork. Where do we stand literally with disclosure at this point? And I got to ask you about the clock here in a minute.
Look, there are many things that are going on which intrigue me. The new book by Robert Collins and Richard Doty, very interesting, exempt from disclosure. Richard Doty's coming out, really, and going very public with his past activities with AFOSI. And this is very interesting. I've had some other contacts from people I can't go into. There's some activity going on with some of the interstitial people. Something is going on within the government, primarily on the intelligence side, regarding this issue. Right now, there is a significant breach between the intelligence community and the current sitting administration. There are a lot of unhappy people in the CIA, for sure. I think the FBI. I don't know about the NSA. With respect to the administration and their policies, that opens the possibility that the intelligence community, if it was inclined toward moving to disclosure, might do so, even if the administration was reluctant. Plus, you have the situation where the current administration is falling apart. There's a lot of trouble ahead, and they're going to be in great need of a significant distraction, or they're going out pretty weakly.
Yeah, you know, you and I talked about it a long time ago, and you said, well, this administration, they might be the people to do it. And they might be the people to do it, but not for any of the reasons we talked about early on. They need a distraction.
Well, I was making the point that this was an administration that was, in the early days, very amenable to the military intelligence complex. And that with the 911 approval ratings that were generated, that they could do it from strength. But they didn't do it. They went and had war instead. Okay, well, this has been the pattern. I mean, there's always some excuse to put off this truth process here, and they always keep putting it off, meaning they sweep it under the rug, they put it off till tomorrow. Well, they're running out of tomorrows, and they're running out of rugs. So now they're in a position of having to do it from weakness. But again, that's still a basis to proceed, because otherwise this administration is going to go out very, very lamely, and we'll probably have a Democrat win in 2008.
Now when we talk about your previous and still present activities of lobbying and pushing UFO issues around the halls of Congress, has the attitude changed over the years? Is it easier to talk to these people now or worse?
Harder. The distractions of war and terrorism and the secrecy of the Bush administration has made it much more difficult to get candid statements out of anybody in government. So it's more difficult. On the other hand, the pressure on the government from other sources has increased. Countries like Canada and Brazil and Mexico are doing things which are not helping the truth embargo at all. So the pressure is still growing on them. And I still think something will happen soon, but we don't know when exactly.
Do you have any idea when we talk about something will happen soon, what that might be?
No, disclosure. I mean, I think that...
No, but what kind of disclosure is what I'm getting at?
The disclosure event, which is the government acknowledging the ET presence, is the next step. It's the next phase of this whole thing, and they can't get to it. They keep putting it off. They keep allowing themselves to be talked out of it and or won't do it. But it's simply becoming harder and harder to maintain that policy and not look stupid. And it's helping to damage the trust factor. Trust in government is certainly down, and that makes it even harder to keep the trust of the people, because a lot of the American people already know there's an ET presence. They know the government, and most of the people know the government's lying about it. And the government lies about so much that their attitude is, well, they lie about everything, so what's new? Well, that's fine, but as the problems of the world start to become more tangible to the American middle class, when they start to see, boy, my kids may not have as good a lifestyle as I had. Things may be on the downside now. When they start seeing the jobs gone and the government lies and wars and dead bodies coming home in caskets and other problems, as they start to hit home, their willingness to go along with the same old is going to evaporate pretty quickly. We're already seeing that to some degree. We got citizen teams on the borders protesting the whole border situation, which is a mess. We've got significant attacks at the administration coming from multiple directions. We have enormous problems overseas with our image. I mean, things are kind of falling apart. And we're having to borrow tons of money from China. We're losing our jobs to India. And this is translating into the beginning of a grassroots revolution, which we tend to have about every 25, 30 years here. And I think disclosure may be a significant component of this next kind of grassroots response of the American people to an eventual, in other words, it's the old I'm mad as hell and I can't take it anymore. Well, they're about to reach another one of those mad as hell moments.
I think you're right. I'm inclined to agree with you. I think there will be a populist uprising again.
The uprising is not the term maybe it would fit, but let's say that there will be a populist reaction, citizen reaction, like we have seen in the past, when things get to a certain point where people are fed up, and they're getting there. So disclosure hopefully will benefit from this emerging dissatisfaction, which is being driven by real effects. Terrorists blow up buildings, kill people, hurricanes wipe out cities. Our tourists are drowning in Thailand from tsunamis. The government is ineffective. The government lies. We're hated overseas. These are real problems. These are real tangible policy failures. And people are going to be saying, look, we want people to tell the truth, to get the job done, do their job, take responsibility. And at some point, they're going to actually demand it. And they're going to throw the people out in the ballot box who don't deliver. So you're going to have a changeover in Congress. You're going to have a huge increase in the incumbency losses at the elections, which could start happening in 2006. Disclosure's in there. It's part of it.
It's part of the mix.
It's part of the mix, but it's not fully it's not fully, how would you say, engaged by at the levels of television and high-end media. But it sits there right off stage, ready to be brought on stage.
You brought up the term television and media. You have had things happen at the press club there, but the media really hasn't covered the X conferences the way I thought they should.
Well, no, they never give you what you want. We had a lot of press passes given out, something like 60. But no, the media has still not crossed the Rubicon on this issue. They are still standing outside waiting for the government to some sort of give them an invitation, right? In other words, I believe deals were struck. I really believe that deals were made between the big papers and the big networks on this issue. Literally, deals. I don't think there's a contract on somebody's desk, but I believe that the major publishers and the owners of the major networks, which eventually were all corporate owners, they met in one way or another with government officials and agreed specifically to keep this issue minimized. An occasional article, maybe the occasional show, but no way would they get on the high horse about it. I think these deals were struck. I think that they are very, very risky and historically need to be analyzed extremely carefully whether we ever want to do that again. But because I know enough about these people to know they're smart, they have influence, the people that run GE and the people that run these news operations and the publishers of the Post and the Times, they're smart people, they're savvy people, and if their position is we don't know anything about ETs, then they're liars or they've struck a deal, but they're not stupid. And I believe that they struck a deal.
So you don't have any actual evidence. It's just a matter of putting two and two together.
It's a matter of looks like a duck, walks like a duck, quacks like a duck.
Yeah.
And I'd be happy to debate Schultzberger or Mr. Graham or any of the network executives. They want to come on and let's debate this, and they can show how they've covered the thing properly, and there's no way they could have done a deal. I would enjoy that very much.
That brings me back to when you ran for Congress as independent there. You brought up the UFO issue in one of those debates.
Oh, yeah. Several debates. And neither of the candidates, now understand that both candidates knew that there was nothing to be gained by in any way giving me a hard time, because they knew from the polls that I was not carrying a swing percentage. So let's just say that, but neither did they in any way laugh or demean my issue, all right? Which is interesting because... Well, let's just say that you had an 8-term Republican, and you had a well-known state senator. You had Connie Morella and Van Hollen, Chris Van Hollen, and they in no way ever said anything demeaning this issue. And there I was. Now, maybe they were just hoping I'd come and I'd go, and it wouldn't affect them one way or the other. But Connie Morella came up to me at one point during that campaign and asked me, you know, why am I doing that? Because I may throw the election to the Democrats. No, I didn't throw the election to the Democrats. The Democrats won fair and square. But at no time did she come up to me or Kristen Hawk come up to me and say, what do you mean about ETs? There's nothing to this subject. I bet you that if you could secretly poll every member of Congress, all the top people at the executive office of Washington, and all the top military officers, that well over 50% of them would, in a private secret poll, would tell you, yeah, we're pretty sure there's ETs here, or I know for a fact there's ETs here. That's how weird this is. That is how strange this is. Remember, the official position is there's nothing here. So that's a very bizarre political circumstance with incalculable consequences, right? And we need to end that circumstance. It's too weird, and it's too mendacious.
Well, I think it takes someone like you and a few more like you out there talking with this as being a serious issue, so that the guffaw factor goes away.
Well, there's plenty of people talking about it as a serious issue. We know that. The witness list at the disclosureproject.com and Paul Hellyer, the Defense Minister of Canada, Lord John Peter Hill Norton, Admiral Norton, former head of defense in Britain, they've all said that this is real. And others, we could just list them. So there's plenty of people talking about it seriously. What we can't break is essentially the government's fundamental position and this deal arrangement between the government and the press. All right? Because we know that, you know, a bunch of us just can't go to Washington and make this happen. The press is critical to educating the public about key issues so they can make decisions. So we can't break this deal that has been made between Mr. Graham and Mr. Sulzberger and a few other major editors and the network executives and their owners, corporate owners, and the government to stand down on the ET issue. We can't break that yet, and the government's position hasn't broken. That's really the issue. It's not that people aren't talking seriously. It's not that there aren't hundreds of documentaries. There aren't that Hollywood isn't doing ET movies all the time and ET shows all the time. It's none of that. It is that deal. It just sits there. It's, in other words, it is this arrangement between the government and the press is like a dike or a dam that contains a growing body of water, huge body of water, and the only thing that prevents that water from breaking out is that dam. All right. In other words, you don't have to contain the body of water is kind of contained by the banks, right? But the thing that breaks the stance between and the release is this dam, and that dam is primarily the government's stated position and the deal with those top end media. Now, the government's position could be justified on the basis of national security. The press are going to have a more difficult time at that, because the press are much more in violation of their code of ethics than the government is. In its position, the government can say, from a national security position, this is what we had to do. The press and the anarchists say, wait a minute, we compromised our ethics, we compromised our position for national security, and then they're going to have to justify that, and they're going to have a real hard time doing that.
What do you think's behind the press cooperating so much? Is it money, basically?
I think there's an implied threat. I think that the government is saying that if you don't go along with this, we'll find a way to make things uncomfortable for you. On the other hand, if you do go along with this, we'll make things easy for you. And the best way to describe the easy part is simple. Everybody knows about unnamed sources. Everybody knows about high sources. Everybody knows about that. It's part of media all over. Everybody knows that we have a very complex society, and that these newspapers and reporters that have to cover it, I mean, it's not easy, all right? It's like you're going to what? And if the agencies of government weren't cooperating with you, if you couldn't get access, if you didn't have sources behind the scenes, unnamed sources or high position sources, you would have a fit find out what's going on. And so the government can say, look, we're going to cut you off. If you don't do this, you're not going to get access to the information. We're not going to give you those unnamed sources. You're going to have to just stand out in front of our buildings and yell at us, you know, like, what's going on? And they don't want that. That scares them to death. They say, we can't do our jobs if we do that. So I think it's a carrot-stick thing that so far has worked.
I'm going to let you go here in a minute, but I want to talk more about the X conference. What do we got to do to get somebody to bankroll this thing? I mean, what's in it for them?
Well,
that's the problem.
The X conference, I believe, has the potential to be a very important franchise. The two conferences did a lot of good, generated a lot of video, documentary material, brought people together. Certainly raised some, I'm sure, eyebrows in Washington.
I mean, we just can't see this go by the wayside, is what I'm saying.
Well, you know, the fact is that I it wasn't a business operation, it was an activist. I'd lost a good deal of money the first two times around, and while I've improved on the structure and cut the cost, the fact is that it emptied me completely. I have no funds, and so I simply can't do another one. I do not have the money to do the marketing or give the hotel their advance monies. So without that, I cannot secure a date. What is needed? Because the previous two conferences had to be made whole. In other words, people have to be paid. There's a lot of money was paid out. Over $100, let's see, how much is paid out? Something like $130,000. But in order for the franchise to be solid, all accounts have to be settled. Speakers who have balances have to be paid. Certain loans have to be paid back. That way, the conference's relationship with the field is solid. And then the hotel has got to have an advance money and then advance promotion. With that, the conference is solid for the third year, and if it finally generates money, it's solid for thereafter. And it's going to take about $60,000. I need a $60,000 funder. And they would do it because they would make whole the conference. They would ensure its longevity for a good while and all the benefits therein, which multiply. A lot of the money, by the way, most of the $60,000 is going to go to speakers. And these are the researchers. These are people doing the work. I mean, if you're going to give them money, those are the people to give it to.
That's right.
I've paid out over $22,000 in speaker fees on the two conferences. That goes in the pockets of the people that are doing the research out of their own pocket.
Right.
So the money is all put to good use. In fact, all of the shortfall is primarily speaker balances and some loans. And then, of course, if the conference can stay in business, that's more money that goes to the speakers, right? And also, you know, I'm able to utilize my 10 years in the field to try to get the maximum impact in the Washington area from the conference. It's the only conference of its kind in the Washington area, which is where the capital is, which is where they make the decisions. So this is a conference that I think deserves.
Yeah, it needs to go on, and it needs to be, as you say, made solid.
Now, every conference out there would love to get $60,000, and $60,000 would benefit any of the conference you could think of. And so it's not that they don't deserve it, and I don't, but there is an activist and real value to this event that is much more than just UFOs, and it's much more than simply.
I mean we're in a world where no longer is it the Cotton Bowl or the Orange Bowl. It's always some manufacturer X Bowl, you know, with somebody's name. I've been racking my brain and thinking of somebody that would like to sponsor the X Conference, but here again,
somebody said, "Look, we want our name on the conference." I would say the X Conference buy or you know, or be like some corporation, pick a name, you know, XYZ Corporations, X Conference 2000. I'd be happy to do it. Now, would a corporation do this? I'd be shocked. I'd be really shocked.
But is there anyone out there that we might, you know?
Look, you know, let's face it, $60,000, it's nothing. Okay, it's nothing. I know a lot of people, that's what they spend on their lawn. I mean, the average MBA salary is, I think, $4 million, $5 million, the average. But there are so many people out there that if they cared about this, that have $60,000, that could make this whole tomorrow. They just have to make the connection in their mind of like, wow, I have $60,000 I can easily spare. It makes an important conference viable. It helps move disclosure ahead. It may get me the truth someday about this ET issue, and maybe my kids will go to the stars, and maybe we'll avoid a lot of nonsense in the 21st century. They make that connection, we're home free.
You know, you hear on public radio and television, this foundation, somebody ought to create a foundation that is interested in UFOs and science, and it would be a good thing.
I know of one, but it is very, very small funding. It's a private deal. The Fetzer Foundation did some work in the paranormal. They gave some money to John Mack. But
there ought to be somebody out there listening that has the money that could set up a foundation just like that.
Believe me, if I could sit down with Paul Allen for just an hour, uh-huh, I would make the case to Paul Allen. I said, look, I appreciate what you do with SETI and everything, but I don't think SETI's been that effective, though I think you'll get some nice radio telescopes. You know, and by the way, Paul Allen's the third richest man in the world at $22.4 billion. I'd say, Paul, why don't you set up a $50 million foundation to do nothing but exclusively fund research in UFO phenomena and the exopolitical activism, and you'll change the world inside of 18 months. For $50 million, literally changed.
Have we run a demographic study on our listeners? Do we have Paul Allen? No, never mind.
Look, I was upset when Paul Allen put that money in SETI, because I know SETI was a front organization for the government from the beginning. It was designed to take pressure off the government so that it didn't look like it was doing nothing about extraterrestrials, because everybody knows it was a possibility. So SETI was set up to be that front, take the pressure off. And then the Congress got fed up with that and said, forget it. So it was let loose from the government, and instantly, not surprisingly enough, a whole bunch of private money was immediately available, so it was still there. It's a front operation. So I was upset when he gave him all that money, almost $20 million. However, in retrospect, realizing how much he has, it was nothing. $20 million was nothing. It's the world to me, but it's nothing to him. And also, it's going to build the Allen Radio Telescope Array, which will do a lot of other things besides simply look for ET signals. So I'm not as upset now. But nevertheless, someone like Paul is the kind of guy who, if he put the pieces together and said, wait a minute, I think the ETs are really already here, and I think we just need to get the truth out to the people, and I'll fund that. Oh, boy. Or George Soros. George Soros is the kind of person, based on his background and what he values, he could set up a foundation for this, an exopolitical foundation to fund exopolitical, and I guarantee in 18 months the cover-up will be over, because there's never been serious money in play or against this issue, which is one of the goals of the government.
Say Mr. Soros is listening. How's he get a hold of you?
Get in touch with PRG at ParadigmRG@AOL.com, ParadigmRG, or you can call Paradigm's main phone number, which is 202-215-8344. And, of course, everything that I do and with thousands of links to other sites is at the main website of ParadigmClock.com.
Yeah, that clock, is it moved anymore?
You know, I haven't moved it lately. It's been a good year and a half, and one of the reasons is things are so weird now. You know, with the war and the terrorism thing, I don't know how to assess the situation, you know. I mean, I can make a case that the Bush administration's decisions regarding the war, I've made it disclosure less likely. I can also make a case that's made it more likely. So I don't have a clear basis yet to adjust the time. But when that emerges, I will do it, and I'll list all the things that I think affect it. So it's still close to midnight. It's still like a minute and 15 or a minute and 35 seconds away. So it's, of course, disclosure. That's what the paradigm clock is all about.
I just don't feel that we can get this point across or labored enough that we're only talking about $60,000.
Well, that's the X conference. For $250,000, I can do the citizen hearing project, which is where we hold the mock.
Now that was interesting. We talked about that one time before. Go into that a little bit for our new listeners.
That's $250,000. Well, you know, it's real simple. It has to be done at a high level because you can't do something like this in the basement of a library. So I bring in 6 to 8 former members of the House and Senate. We set up a Senate hearing room in a hotel a few blocks from the Capitol with a public audience and tables for the witnesses. We have donated legal help from some lawyers. We provide staff to these 6 to 9 members of Congress, former members of Congress, and then we bring in the witnesses, and they literally swear under oath. And they sit and they actually give their testimony to these former members exactly they would to a real congressional hearing if the Congress had the guts to do it. And these people would listen to the testimony, they would ask all the questions they wanted, and then they would maybe write a statement of their thinking on this at the end, and we'd then publish, we'd film the whole thing, we'd make the tapes available, we'd make a transcript available, and of course the witnesses would be available to the press. We'd invite the press to cover the whole thing, we'd go on for a whole week. 5 days of testimony, Monday to Friday. And then a Sunday would be an introductory period, and Saturday would be a banquet. And this would be the citizen hearing. The motto is, if the Congress won't do its job, the people will. But to do that right, with the airfares and the hotel and the meals and the venue rental and everything, that's about $250,000. But it would shake the foundations of the cover-up, because a few blocks from the Congress, the Capitol building, there'd be former members of Congress, the higher level, the better, the best I can get, who were listening to the witnesses they should be listening to, and when the press, and with it all being filmed, at least by us, if not by other organizations, I know that at least 5 documentary teams that would be there in a heartbeat. So they know the thing is going to be out there, and they're sitting over there going, they're doing our job. We're not doing this, and they are. That's going to make us look really stupid. So it could be very powerful.
Okay,
and we still haven't spent a lot of money here. We're only up to $310,000.
Right, the whole thing.
You know, I mean, Paul Allen, he makes the interest on his net worth, that's about a month. It might even be a week. What's the interest on $22 billion a year? It's 5%. 5%, believe it or not, 5% is $1 billion a year in interest. That works out to approximately $80 million a month. No, $80 million a month, right?
Yeah.
All right, so that's
a day or two.
$80 million a month. I think we're talking about a day's worth of interest.
At the moment.
Bingo. That takes care of the citizens.
Okay,
But he's not the only. But there are plenty of people who could do this out there. Mark Cuban, I mean, Ted Turner, Mavericks, people, Ross Perot, people that are clearly outside the box, clearly their own people, clearly chart their own path. But they have still, they're still mesmerized, hypnotized by the whole razzmatazz that the government's put on about, oh, there's nothing to investigate, there's no threat to the government, we're looking for ETs with our SETI telescopes. There's no problem. There's nothing to worry about, and they're believing it. At least they seem to believe it, because they don't do anything about it.
Well, hopefully things will change, and hopefully somebody out there will get in contact with you.
Hey. ParadigmRG at AOL.com or 202-215-8344. Give me a call. Let's sit down and talk. We'll change history together.
Sounds good. Thanks very much, Stephen Bass.
As always, Jerry.
Pleasure.